so glad you're here. This is the Efficiency Bee Podcast, and I'm your host, Melissa Leone. This is the podcast where we talk about bold ideas to live a balanced life. We talk about things from time management and efficiency to organization, business, parenting, all of these things wrapped up into one. I hope you join me each week as we interview amazing people who work hard and do their best to make their own world a better place. You've heard of a queen bee, a honey bee, or a busy bee? This is Efficiency Bee. Hey, Amanda, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Melissa.
Oh, I'm so glad we finally made it here. You and I have been trying to figure out this interview for quite some time, so I'm super stoked to get it going. And if you haven't listened to the podcast that I was on of Amanda's, we'll make sure to put the link in the show notes because we had a great conversation on her show not too long ago. Amanda, let's start with an introduction. Who are you? Where do you come from?
Yeah, so I am currently residing in Cincinnati, Ohio. I lived half my life in Chicago, Illinois as well. We might touch on some of my story while I lived there for a while. I'm an entrepreneur, but did never think I would become one. And I'm on my second business, sold the first. I'm also mom to an amazing little almost four-year-old.
Awesome. How fun. Well, let's get started with your first business. Like, how did you stumble into entrepreneurship?
Yeah. So I actually went straight from college into the nonprofit sector. I wanted to make the world a better place. I thought nonprofits, that's how you do it. And I started as the assistant to a grant writer, found grant writing was something I could do really well and became a grant writer myself at that nonprofit. And it was my first site visit where I was taking the foundation representatives that had given us the grant to the site where we were using the funds to do some really awesome community programming on the South Side in Chicago. And when I walk in, you know, in my little pantsuit, you know, 23 years old or so, I realized I'm on the wrong side of the table here. I fit way better with these folks that are in the community doing the work, being the hands and feet of social change in their neighborhood. And I started thinking, like, how do I do that? And also, like, how do I not be in this place where I'm just telling people without resources, if you want our resources, here's what you have to do, right, with them. And I discovered that all across Chicago, there were these small businesses, mom and pop kind of shops that were making real differences in their communities and around the world through how they sourced and the different things they were doing. And I was like, that's what I need to do. And about the same time, my husband was like, we love coffee. We should start a coffee shop. And I was like, no, we're not going to do that. Maybe we'll like go help some business or like do a franchise. I'm not starting something from scratch. But eventually he convinced me that was the way to go.
Fun. And you had the coffee shop for a long time.
Yeah. So we wrote our business plan in 2008. We opened in 2011, almost exactly 3 years later. And then we sold it in 2018, about 7 years later.
Interesting. I am just starting to embark on the world of selling a business. I'm not selling my business. I'm just very interested in the process of going through valuation and how one does that. Do you have any pearls of wisdom from that time period?
Yeah, there's actually this really amazing book that's put together by NOLO. It's like the National Organization of Law, something or other, N-O-L-O. Mm-hmm. They create these books, and I bought the one that was How to Sell a Business, almost like How to Sell a Business for Dummies, but it's written by actual attorneys. Mm-hmm. And I read it cover to cover. It was so helpful. It gave me like, here's what the buyer's looking for. Here's also how to negotiate so that then when I did hire an attorney, which is very important to do when you're selling a business, mm-hmm. I knew what questions to ask. I saved a ton of money because I was actually able to do a lot of the work myself up front before even involving the attorney in some of the review of contracts or drafting the things because I already knew what we wanted and had negotiated a lot of it.
Yeah, that's cool. We do a lot of startups and helping a lot of people at the beginning phases figure out, you know, just all of the things that they don't know about accounting and setting up the business. And then we love the established because they usually need some new ideas and new thoughts. And I love the idea of digging into how to value and help companies sell, because I think we've seen a lot of businesses start since 2020 began and people started deciding to work for themselves. But I'm curious how people will leave these businesses. Will they just abandon them or will they go to sell them? And I'd like to learn about that. I think it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. I will say probably my biggest takeaway, other than like getting this book and learning things and having an attorney, is that before we even thought we were going to sell the business, like years before, we realized if we wanted this business to work long term, it had to be profitable. It had to actually like pay us a living wage and maybe a little bit more than that. And too many business owners never get there. And we took very intentional steps to make sure we actually paid ourselves first before paying our staff or paying our rent or buying inventory. And though looking back, those steps are exactly what made it attractive to someone to buy it. It was almost like the things that were good for us to make sure the business worked for us actually made it more attractive to a potential buyer as well.
That's such a good segue too, Amanda. We are here in the letter B for the podcast. So we're all about bank. It's all about money. And I know you are a finance expert. So tell me all about the things that you did consciously in order to make sure that you were showing a profit on the business.
Yeah, it actually came from a podcast, and I had started
all good
listening.
Things do.
Yeah, they do. I had started listening to a podcast, and I heard this guy with a funny name, Mike Michalowicz, on a podcast, and he talked about this concept he came up with called profit first.
Yeah,
and that's all I heard was him describe, right? You pay yourself first rather than last from your business, and we made that very simple switch. We said, okay, here's what we need from the business to at least like put food on the table, stop eating ramen, and have like a healthy wage from our business. And we put that first of the month rather than last of the month. And we made sure we made a business that could pay us that all the time. And that we didn't actually adopt the full profit first method. I didn't even really know that that existed. I was just like, we're going to make this very simple change. And we did it. And we had to work at it. It didn't happen overnight. But it was amazing. I'm so glad I was listening to a podcast and actually then also took action, because I could have just as easily, you know, went along and never put it into practice. And then what's been fun is as we've sold the business, I actually got the Profit First book and was like, what if we did this from the start, exactly how Mike teaches in the Profit First book? And, you know, we're about to start a second business. What would it look like to use Profit First in that? And we've used it, this business we've now been in for 4 years. It's totally transformed everything that we do with money, not just how we pay ourselves, but how we make financial decisions. And the system that he has there, that's percentage-based, that gives you an easy way to move money around in the business and know how much you have for the different things at all times. I'm in business with my husband. It's solved a lot of marital disputes.
You know, and I've read the book, and I also agree with many of the Profit First methodologies. I do find it to be too complicated for some business owners. They just don't do well with moving money around in that space. So maybe give us a quick overview of the outline of the methodology and where you've seen both the pros and the cons in your space.
Yeah. What I like is that I don't have to think about money all the time. I only have to think about it on the 10th and 25th or whatever days work for me. I actually, a lot of my business, I only get paid once a month. So I think about money once a month in my business. And then I also like that it's percentage based. No matter how much I made that month or didn't make that month, I can put a percentage toward my profit, a percentage toward what I'm actually going to pay myself, my base salary, a percentage set aside for taxes because Uncle Sam's going to take his section. And then I can spend the rest in my business. And me being a little bit of, I was raised by My dad was part of the Greatest Generation, very much a frugal penny pincher kind of guy. It's been actually hard for me to spend money. Mm-hmm. So knowing those percentages are there and then having the freedom to actually use my operating expenses, you know, invest in the business, help it grow that way has been really freeing for me. And then on the flip side, my husband's a spender. It's helped to rein him in and he knows we're going to spend. I'm not going to keep him from spending those funds. But he also knows we're not doing that at the expense of are we going to have the money on April 15th to send into the Internal Revenue Service?
Mm-hmm. I think those two personas, the spender and the saver, if you will, are so common to see both in couples, but also in business partnerships and helping one another. You don't want to be a spender and you don't want to be unwilling to spend. You need to have a middle ground on both angles. So that is some of the stuff that I think is very valuable in the Profit First methodology too. I love the framework to that. Are you holding multiple bank accounts?
When I first adopted Profit First, I did not. I use a software called You Need a Budget or YNAB for short. I love it. And I just set them up as separate line items in my budget, right? My profit, my owner's comp, my tax, and then my operating expenses. Mm-hmm. And it was good. It worked. I'm very disciplined. I didn't feel like I ever cheated and moved money around even within the budget that way. Mm-hmm. And I was encouraged by someone else that does Profit First to go ahead and set up the bank accounts. And I was like, oh, I don't know, teeter totter. And then I finally did it and actually love it because sometimes I don't always update my budget software. Sometimes I don't go into zero and move the money around. But every time the first of the month, I'm able to do that easy calculation, this percent to from my income account to profit, this percent to owner's comp, et cetera. And I know it's done. I don't even have to think about updating zero or updating YNAB. We use them for different purposes, zero for taxes and YNAB for actually cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm able to do that first of the month, forget about it. And then when I get around to updating the other two softwares, that's great. And it actually doesn't take me very much more time. And in the meantime, whatever time has elapsed there, a couple days or a couple weeks, sometimes, sadly, a month before I update those things, I can easily pull up my bank accounts and see what's there without having to go and update everything all the time.
Yeah, I think that that's a smart process. I like that you're using YNAB alongside Xero. So Xero, for if you're listening, is kind of like QuickBooks. It's going to be more of that a typical accounting software, and YNAB is more of a budgeting process, but I love that you're using it for cash flow. I think many business owners in particular that I work with don't see the difference between a profit and loss statement and a cash flow statement. And man, are they different things, right?
Yep.
I've seen a lot of people get into trouble with the Profit First methodology with having multiple accounts and not using cash flow to really pay attention to it. So a lot of it, I think, just depends on your own discipline, your own habits, and then your willingness to learn new process and to move it forward. Remember how I mentioned my dream job? Well, I thought I'd take this opportunity to tell you a little bit about it. It's called 2Sense Consulting. TWOSENSE. We focus on building custom, simple, and sensible accounting solutions to small businesses. We customize a plan based on the specific business needs. Options are available from a single consultation, multiple session packages, or long-term support. We're 100% woman-owned and operated. We specialize in strategy, process improvement, or just some good old-fashioned accounting cleanup. We're here to help you maximize the way you spend your time and money. All right, let's get back to the show.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it really, you know, me having that the first of the month, I go in and do those adjustments without fail has really been the key to success for Profit First for me, is having that rhythm.
Yeah.
Because then I see if it was high or low and I can think about, okay, then what's coming up this month that I need to be aware of and so forth. Especially if you're in a business that has variable income, cash flow is queen 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree completely. And I think that So YNAB is you need a budget. If you were to Google it, that would be what you would be looking for. And it's a pretty simple process, I think, once you get in it. But I think you hit the nail on the head when you said getting into that rhythm, right? Learning that discipline of you can't ignore your finances in business or in your personal life. Like, you can't just shove it in a closet and hope that it organizes itself, because I promise it won't. And having that rhythm and that cadence in order to make sure that you keep on top of it. I am way far on one side of the spectrum. I look at my cash flow, both for my business and my personal stuff, daily. I mean, if I miss a day, it's weird. It's just the way that I am. But I know others who are so far on the opposite end of the spectrum, they can't ever seem to get a grip on it. So I think if you as a listener get nothing else from this, that cadence and that rhythm, like Amanda said, on looking at your money all the time, I think is really important.
Yeah. And I'll add to that. I started weekly. Every Friday I would do that. And yeah, then over time I've realized I don't get paid that often. I'm going to switch to monthly.
Yeah. And scheduling it in your calendar. I mean, one thing I hear from business owners a lot is, I'm already booked out, I can't get it in. You need to book that time with yourself first, because you will get booked over, and it's not negotiable. You're going to spend that hour once a week digging into it and educating yourself. And I think it's really important.
Yeah. I was talking with a real estate agent earlier this week who's about to start using YNAB and was trying to figure out how he makes it work. And with his busy schedule, especially right now, real estate, he's barely keeping up with it. And I was like, well, if you do it daily, it's 5 minutes a day and mm-hmm. you could make it part of your morning routine. And he was like, I could totally do that. And that made it way easier to think about than a whole hour once a week.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does take, maybe it'll take you 10 minutes a day to start, but very quickly you get the hang of it and it's clean. And then it really does shorten into minutes a day. I think that's really important. My mother-in-law used an analogy once. We were talking about money and she said she likes to think about money like she's driving a car, right? Like, sometimes you have to look behind you and figure out what you spent your money on. Sometimes you need to look right in front of you. Sometimes you need to look way in front of you. And you always need to be aware of what's going on around you. And we wrote a blog about it because I think that analogy really plays well for personal finance, but also for business finance, so that you can make sure that you're not going to stare straight in front of you the whole time. You're going to glance in your rearview mirror. You're going to glance to the side, but that doesn't mean you're going to stare in your rearview mirror the whole time either, right? Like, you can't, you can't keep focus on one particular place. You have to be aware of the crosswalk 10 feet in front of you, but also the stoplight 100 yards in front of you. So, anyway, I am a big believer in that type of review. So what are you doing these days? What is your current business?
Yeah. So now I'm actually a financial professional. I work a lot with business owners to make sure that because they started a business, their personal finances don't need to suffer. And actually they can have their business money and their personal money working in harmony together. Mm-hmm. I think because of having the coffee shop before, I feel like I can relate to how do you build wealth as a person who's self-employed in charge of your own livelihood and taking a lot of risk within a business? How do you do that in a way that is sustainable and actually going to work? And I don't, you know, I'm sure there's other people out there, but I feel like that's one thing that I've got a unique insight into, particularly for the kind of entrepreneurial types that don't want to follow the quote unquote rules, or they're skeptical of the conventional thinking that's really just been popular since the 1980s. And they want to tap into what are some of the more like time tested principles that have been around for millennia that I can learn the principle, but then figure out how to apply it to my situation and my day and time.
Mm-hmm. And so you've come up with some methodology, right? To help hone in on this skill and to really make it more tangible for people to work on?
Yeah, it's called the STILL method. And STILL is an acronym, STILL. Each letter stands for an element to consider and think through, reflect on, so that then you can move forward with confidence. You want me to go through it?
Yeah, I would love that.
Okay. So the STILL stands for set your sights. This is where you really think about your goals, your why, your vision. Where are you going? Kind of if you're driving the car, I love that analogy. What's the ultimate destination?
Mm-hmm.
And you really like, you got to know where you're going in order to get there, right? So S is setting your sights.
So an example of that might be like, I'm going to buy a house and I need to save enough money for a down payment. That's where am I going? Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah. Okay. Cool. It could also be, I want to be able to live my life how I want in the way that I want to without financial concern.
Mm-hmm.
It does, like, I love smart goals, but it could also not be so smart. It could just be a feeling or a vision.
Sure.
Kind of thing.
I love that. Good. I like the flexibility. That's awesome.
Okay. Then the T is track your in and out. Actually look at what's come into your life, what's gone out of your life, what's come into your business, what's gone out of the business. You're kind of seeing a little bit of the cash flow there. No judgment, but being aware of what's going on there.
Yes, I love it.
Then the I is you got to actually take some time to inspect your progress. Has your in and out gotten you closer to or farther away from where you've set your sights? How's mm-hmm. it going? Are you moving in the right direction? Inspect your progress.
I love that. I come from a family of money people on both sides of my mom was in banking for a long time, and both my in-laws are as well. And my father-in-law gave me some advice just recently. And he said every year on December 31st, or, you know, sometime in the month of January, pull all of your bank statements or your assets or your investments and just take note of the balance on the 31st of that year. And over the course of your lifetime, you will have this opportunity to see your wealth or your savings or your investments change. And he said, you can really lose sight of it if you're not paying attention to it. So I think tracking your progress is something that goes forgotten a lot. And that was a really cool way for us to be able to do that. We started this year for the first time.
Great. Good for you. Because the talking heads out there in the conventional thinking world tell you, don't look at your investment balance. Don't even open your 401k statement. Don't pay attention to it. And I hate that, because how do you know if it's actually working the way you were told it was going to work for you?
Yeah, I agree. I think not worrying about it when it crashes is one thing, but ignoring it is bad advice, in my opinion.
Correct. Yeah, 100%. Yes. Okay. So inspect your progress. And that's also, if we're talking about YNAB, you need a budget. They've got that net worth statement in there. And actually, you can put in tracking accounts and track some of these things that aren't really part of your budget to see how they interplay with your net worth that way. It's one of the things I like about seeing the cash flow, but also seeing am I making progress at the same time?
Yeah, I love it.
And then the first L is look for the 1% adjustment. What's the small action you could take that helps get your T and I closer to your S? Mm-hmm. And that could be an email template to save you time. I know efficiency, right? It mm-hmm. could be reducing an expense or growing an income. It could be all kinds of different things. But you look for that small adjustment that you can make.
God, that is like such a passion of mine. Can I just tell you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Finding that 1% is so impactful on your time and your money and your energy. That's like what the podcast is all about, really, is finding different ways to save on that 1% and think about things in a new way. You know, whether it be, okay, maybe I only go to Starbucks twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays, that's my reward, and I don't go 7 days a week. That can be your 1%. But it could also be, like you said, that template, that email template that you're writing the same email over and over. There's a million different ways that you can look at that.
Yeah. And I love to think about the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule,
mm-hmm.
with looking at what's that 20% that's getting you the biggest results, and how do you grow that to 21%? Or how do you focus on those top 20% of customers to grow the amount of money they pay you 1%? There's all kinds of fun we can do when we're looking for the 1% adjustment.
Yeah, my business partner and I both come from the hospitality world, and menu engineering is very important for a restaurant. And you look at your categories on a menu as, is it profitable and is it popular, right? So like the hamburger might be the most profitable thing on your menu, but if no one's ordering it, it doesn't matter. Or you might have a surf and turf that is super popular, but you're losing money, so stop selling it. And looking at things in different categories like that, where are you spending all your energy? Where are you spending your money? And quadrant that out to try to figure out how to spend and save time and energy.
Yeah. What I love, we have so much data at our fingertips. What we did in our coffee shop days was look at, we pulled up our sales report and we were using Square at the time. And we just looked at who are our top customers. And of course, they're the people, we know their names. We know their drink order, right? Like it becomes like that. And we just, next time they came in, we said, hey, what improvements would you like to see make? What would you, what we, could we offer that you would 100% buy every time you come in along with your favorite latte? Mm-hmm. And we started listening to that, and we actually were able to take those people that loved us, that were our regulars, that would buy things, and instead of them spending $5, we'd get them to spend $60. Mm-hmm. It was amazing.
I love that. That's, listening to your current customers is really important, and so many people miss that. I think that's really smart business insight. And what's the final L?
Yeah, so a great segue actually to the final L. It's to live deliberately. So many people find the 1% adjustment, that, but then they don't put it into action, or they don't share it with their team and ask, okay, what here's where we're going to go as a team. How would you do this? How do we, you know, cut costs or grow revenue all together? Yeah. And so it's really like taking the time to put it on the calendar, strategize with, you know, your team or with a mentor, a coach, or, you know, your kids, whatever that 1% adjustment is, and get everybody on board and actually live it out. So then you can come back and do the still method all over again and see, did it work? Mm-hmm. Right. And it's now am I getting closer to my sights, and look for the next 1% adjustment, or try something different if that one didn't work.
Yeah. Rock on. How frequently are you looking through your still process? Is it a monthly thing, or is it, you know, do you have several of them kind of happening at the same time while you're working different projects, or how do you use it?
Yeah. So what I've found is that when I want to sit down and update my budget, I can just get lost in, okay, I'm just going to make the updates and then move on. But if I encapsulate it in the still method, and before I even open YNAB, I will remember, here's where I'm going. Here's what I want to do. Let me check in, make sure that's still where I want to go. And then I'll update my budget. And then I won't just update my budget. I'll see, well, is it getting me closer? And how do I, what adjustments do I want to make? And I make it part of that entire process. One, it's a lot more enjoyable. And two, it's actually changing my business rather than just being another task I have to do. Mm-hmm. So I do, every time I'm updating YNAB, I'm using the still method along with that. And then I update zero kind of as part of that too, so that my taxes are on track and my accountant loves me.
Yes.
But, and then once a month, my husband and I together go through the still method together and make sure we're on the same page. We know how that's been going. And then once a quarter, we do an even deeper dive into it to make sure that we've got our like quarterly rocks of what are those 1% adjustments that we want to make this quarter, and how do they fit into the things we're doing on a monthly basis that way.
That's lovely. I think that's awesome. I have to just highlight something you said about make sure your accountant loves you. I just want to highlight, Amanda and I are both finance professionals, and we both have accountants that do tax stuff for us. There are so many different layers to financial literacy and understanding it all. I'm a huge believer in having more than one set of eyes on my books. You know, we do our own books for our own business because we're financial controllers, but we have a CPA that looks at it on top of it. And I love that you mentioned that, because I think so many times people assume an accountant's an accountant's an accountant, and finance people all know the same thing. And man, it's different at every angle.
Yeah. Very good point. Because we really need a financial team, right? We need the person to file our taxes. We need the bookkeeper. We need the financial planner to help us think of the overall picture and how it's going. We might even need a business attorney to look at, are these numbers, you know, should we do W-2 or 1099 employees? All kinds of questions that are related to money that different people are going to have different perspectives on.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think it's so critical for business owners. And I tell people all the time, like, you don't need to have wealth in order to have a financial advisor or a wealth manager. You have to seek that out in order to build wealth. You don't wait till you have wealth and then go get somebody to help you, because chances are good it'll take a lot longer or may never happen. So I think that's really important. Amanda, where can our listeners find you?
Yeah, well, so if you like the Still Method, you can check out stillmethod.com and get a copy of our playbook that goes through the questions to ask on each one of those letters of the acronym. And then we also have a podcast called the Wealth Wisdom Financial Podcast that wherever you're listening to the show, you can check us out there.
Awesome. And I was on that show. We'll put the link in so people can find you easily. And I really appreciate you being on. Thanks again.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, Melissa. It's been a pleasure.
Well, that wraps it up. Thank you so much for listening. I am so blessed to have so many cool people on this show. And I really enjoy doing it. If you enjoy listening, please make sure you go and leave a review. These reviews mean a lot in the podcasting world. It's kind of like our version of likes. It helps push the algorithms in the system so that more people can find the episodes and can find the show altogether. So any podcast you love, make sure you're leaving ratings all the time. Really means a lot to us. Hope to see you on my social media page at Efficiency Bee. We're going to be doing big things there over the next couple weeks, and I hope you check it out. Till next time, see ya.